20th Century Fox. Presents a CinemaScope picture. Irwin Allen's production of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's The Lost World. Starring Michael Rennie, Jill St. John, David Hedison, Claude Rains, Fernando Lamas, screenplay by Charles Bennett and Irwin Allen, music by Paul Sortel and Bert Schefter. A flowing river of molten lava, then flames and clouds of steam rising up from a blazing inferno. Produced and directed by Irwin Allen. A large airliner on final approach swoops down towards a landing. There are puffs of smoke from the tires as the undercarriage settles onto the runway and the plane rolls across the tarmac. Soon the aircraft's taxiing towards an airport terminal. A reporter speaks into a microphone as passengers disembark.
Ted Bottomley here with the BBC Special News Service Bureau at London Airport. Well, the midday transatlantic jet has just landed. A tranquil beginning to what could possibly prove to be a highly explosive moment. For this is the homecoming of that indomitable zoological professor, George Edward Challenger.
A bespectacled man with fiery red hair and beard has just stepped from the aircraft when a scrum of press men run towards it.
Out, Jerry!
Gentlemen, please, allow the passengers to descend first.
Professor, please.
I'm from the Mirror.
Are you indeed?
Professor Ahmed Malone, Global News. I'd like a few words with you if you don't mind.
I have no doubt.
Professor, we've heard some hair-raising tales about your expedition. Would you care to say a few words?
Anything I have to say about the expedition will be said tonight at the Institute and not before.
What about New York 8 hours ago? Why'd you punch that reporter on the nose? What provoked you to hit him?
I'll tell you what provoked me, sir. He made the same mistake that you are making. Invaded my privacy, just as you are doing now.
Oh, come now, Professor. This is all in the interest of newsmaking. Surely you must realize...
I realize that you're in my...
Hey!
Hey, have you gone crazy? Oh, my head. Back.
Fools, imbeciles, have no sense of decency. Out of my way.
Hey, look out! Watch it! Careful!
Go away! You're a pack of fools. Is there no privacy anywhere? Invaders of privacy. How dare you? Fools! Will you get out of my way?
Frosty! Here, Frosty!
The dog sniffs at the prostrate Malone.
Frosty, stop that! Come back here! Stop that!
I'm sorry, she's crazy about men.
Yeah, well, somebody's crazy. Get even with that guy, even if he's losing my job.
Oh, don't get so carried away, Mr. Malone. The professor's merely eccentric.
Oh, sure. Eccentric enough to be in a padded cell. How'd you know my name?
Ed Malone, Global News Service. Oh, I'm afraid there goes your story.
And there goes my bus.
Oh, I'm sorry. Say, look, my car's right here. I can give you a lift into town.
I appreciate that. I have to change these wet clothes and then get out to that lunatic's meeting tonight.
That makes two of us. I'm going also.
You?
My name is Jennifer Holmes. That's right, your boss's daughter. You didn't really think I was in the habit of picking up strangers, did you? Mr. Malone, you'd better come along.
I think so.
With Malone in the passenger seat, Jennifer drives her open-top sports car at high speed.
Let me examine that. Read all about it.
An audience waits patiently in a lecture hall. Professor Challenger walks onto stage and immediately manages to annoy one of the handful of people already there with the smoke from his cigar.
Summerlee.
Noticing Summerlee's irritation, Challenger stubs the cigar in an ashtray, then pops the butt in his breast pocket. Summerlee stares at the cigar, which is still burning, till Challenger finally puts it out properly in the ashtray. Jennifer arrives in the company of a suave-looking older man.
Who's he?
It's Professor Walter Summerlee. His challenge is bitterest critic. The redhead is challenged.
My lords, ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please.
Well, the man in the puddle, hello.
Hello. Special meeting by table.
Oh, this is Mr. Edward Malone, Lord John Roxton.
How'd you do? This man on the front page. Should be quite a delightful evening.
Shh. Bless you.
I have been asked to introduce our distinguished colleague, whose international standing as a zoologist is so highly regarded. Such an introduction poses no problem. The professor has a remarkable aptitude for getting himself in the headlines by clashing with the press. Head on, you might say. As you know, the professor has recently returned from a protracted trip of the headwaters of the Amazon River, a trip engendered by his desire to verify certain conclusions which I myself had come to.
Challenger chuckles at his own interjection.
With regard to the Kukama Indians, the professor has returned with a report which he insists will turn the scientific world topsy-turvy. He claims to have seen certain strange things. At least that's what he says. But he has been known to exaggerate. Therefore, the Institute does not necessarily accept or endorse any opinions expressed here this evening. That is by Professor Challenger. But again, in fairness, we must all admit that he has contributed much, although noisily, to both zoology and anthropology.
Challenger pointedly drops, then picks up his umbrella.
So, fearing the worst, but with the pious hope that he may be persuaded to refrain from using that, that lethal weapon with which he so frequently punctuates his opinions, I give you Professor George Edward Challenger.
Challenger rises to his feet.
Ladies and gentlemen, when my distinguished colleague implies that we have been in disagreement, he pays me a high compliment. And when he expresses reasonable skepticism, he is not being unreasonable, not in view of the fantastic discovery, which I shall not minimize by any false modesty.
That was not one of my fears, Professor.
Ladies and gentlemen, prepare yourselves for a shock, for I bring you news of a discovery so staggering as to rate with the feats of Columbus, Edison, and Einstein. About 2,000 miles up country on that still barely explored outpost of civilization, which is loosely described as the headwaters of the Amazon, on a wild and unscalable jungle plateau so isolated as to insulate the area from the laws of evolution, there exist today many forms of creatures long believed to be extinct.
What sort of creatures?
Heaven's sake, not now.
The Indians call them Koripuri, the terrible spirits of the woods. Although I have never reached the top, from the base of their plateau, I have seen these creatures with my own eyes. Koripuri, to the Indians, creatures of the supernatural. And well they might be, for we know them as gigantic creatures of the long dead Jurassic period. In other words, live dinosaurs.
You're a fake! Ridiculous! Liar!
Who called me a liar?
You must forgive us, Professor, but did you say dinosaurs?
Your hearing is excellent.
Were they big dinosaurs, Professor?
I do not deal in small dinosaurs.
I assume that you have photographs of these dinosaurs, Professor?
No, sir, I have no photographs. On my way downriver, the boat overturned and all my equipment was lost.
Pity.
In 40 years as a scientist, I have never been known to lie. I say that they were live dinosaurs. Live dinosaurs! And I challenge the world to dispute what I say.
Can you prove what you say?
Put me to the test, young man. I further propose that a new expedition, consisting of Professor Summerly and myself, together with two impartial and acceptable members of this audience, proceed at once to the Amazon to investigate my claim of the existence of a lost world.
Hear, hear.
Well said. Hear, hear.
The dry season in the Amazon ends in November, so I further propose that the necessary extensive preparations be undertaken at once, in order that we may leave not later than 4 weeks from today.
Professor, I would be the first to approve of such an undertaking, but the Institute has limited funds. We have
the money will be forthcoming by public subscription if necessary. However, there is something more important. Professor Summerly has implied that I have been lying. Is he ready to prove or disprove my claim? Will he join me in this new expedition?
Answer him, Summerly.
I doubt that anyone would contribute to such a wild scheme. But if they do, I'll accept your invitation. I'll go. Provided that proper financing is arranged and that the Institute certifies all other acceptable volunteers.
Volunteers!
Yes, volunteers. May I call for qualified volunteers?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Volunteers?
Yeah.
Who are you, sir?
My name is Lord John Roxton. I have earned a certain reputation as a big game hunter, explorer.
Lord Roxton, your eminence in the field of exploration is well known. I feel sure the professors will approve.
Oh, by all means. You're welcome, sir. Summerly?
For myself, I prefer a man of less notoriety. From what I hear, Lord Roxton's more famous, shall I call them, escapades? Which have been so widely reported in the gossip columns, have hardly been in the interests of science. However...
Johnny, you're wonderful. I'm going too.
You're what?
You there, Professor. And you too. My name is Jennifer Holmes, and I can ride, fly, and shoot better than any man I know. I want to go too.
There'll be no women on my expedition.
But, Professor...
That's final.
May I hear from other volunteers?
It's a man's world.
Why don't you volunteer?
May I hear from other volunteers?
What about it, Malone? The climate's very good for colds.
You know, the professor owes me something for that hit on the head.
Good for you, Malone.
You, sir. Your name, please, and your qualifications.
My name is Edward Malone. I'm with Global News.
A fine collection of volunteers, women, and reporters. Didn't you have enough of the airport, young man? Must you continue to invade my privacy? I'll have no reporters on this trip.
Not even for $100,000?
Dad!
My name is Stuart Holmes. I'm Executive Vice President of Global News Service. And I herewith authorize just such a contribution. What about it, Professor? Will $100,000 pay for the passage of Edward Malone?
Very well put, my dear sir. And since I was never a man to resist logic or cash, I shall ignore my personal feelings and approve Mr. Malone as a member of the expedition. Summerly.
An adventurer and a newspaper man. Hardly a crew for a scientific expedition. Certainly not men of my choice. But apparently, with public appeal and funds, reluctantly, I agree.
And that settles it. Now, may I suggest that this public demonstration be adjourned?
Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for your indulgence. The meeting is adjourned.
Well, that does it.
Both of us, I guess.
I'm afraid you both do only too well. Oh, here comes Dad.
Hello, Johnny.
Stuart.
Hi, Jenny. Daddy.
Thank you,
sir.
Hello,
Malone.
My dear Professor, we of Global News are perfectly delighted that one of our bright young men is going to represent us on your epic-making expedition.
Delighted? I should most certainly hope so.
Good evening.
Jenny, I'm sorry they turned you down, but delighted about Malone here. And good for you, Johnny. I'd appreciate it if you'd look after my boy here.
I'd be glad to, Stuart, but at the moment I'm looking after your girl. Excuse us.
Good night.
What's wrong, Malone?
An airliner banks as it flies at altitude. A newspaper headline reads, Challenger Camino del Alto Amazonas, while another reads, Challenger Lega Ario, a television newsreader.
Here's worldwide news. The latest bulletin from Ed Malone, special correspondent for Global News Service, reports the Challenger expedition now flying over entirely unexplored wilderness, en route to Professor Challenger's still undisclosed destination, his lost world somewhere in the endless rainforests. According to Mr. Malone.
The green canopy of the Amazonian rainforest, then a flying boat descending towards a large body of water. Touching down, the twin-engine plane trails a plume of white spray. Pilot cuts the engines a short distance from the tree-lined shore, and the aircraft drifts towards a crude wooden building that's been built there. A motorboat sets out from a jetty to meet the new arrivals. Challenger opens a door in the plane's fuselage.
Trading post of Tarama, gentlemen. The port of no return.
Hot, what? Hey, Somerley?
Two men and a woman are on the porch of the trading post's main building. Gomez, a casually dressed handsome man, stops strumming his guitar and stands up to join the second man, who's wearing a white suit and hat and sporting a beard. They both watch the boat ferrying Challenger's party to the jetty, and Gomez continues to play.
Triumphal music. Seems appropriate. Who are those two characters?
We'll soon know.
The man in the white suit hurries along the jetty just as the boat's being secured to it.
Señores, I am Señor Costa, in charge of your arrangements here in Tarama, and all the supplies necessary to make your journey to whatever place the señores see. Please. May I have the honor of your name, senor?
Lord Roxton, isn't it? Why, yes, have we met?
We have now.
Please, senor, this is Gomez, your helicopter pilot. Please, Gomez, allow me.
You talk too much.
As I said, your lordship, I am Senor Costa. It gives me great pleasure to welcome your lordship's party.
Not my party.
Not your party? Oh, senor, please pardon my understandable error. May I wish all good fortune to your undertaking.
Thanks. But you'll still take your orders from Professor Challenger.
Senor Challenger? Oh, Senor Challenger, please forgive me. Let me help you here. Your slightest wish is my command.
Splendid. That'll be a pleasant change. So you're a helicopter pilot, eh?
Yes, Manuel Gomez. Very happy to be at the service of such a famous person.
Oh, so you heard of me, have you?
Since your last visit to the Amazon, who hasn't heard of you? When I was told of your return, I moved heaven and earth trying to be under your command.
Well, that's very understandable, Gomez. Very understandable. Is your aircraft ready?
Everything ready. We spend the night here at the trading post. In the morning, we only have to load your equipment.
Which I have arranged. Oh, you have you?
Pink boots.
What are those?
Those, Professor Challenger, are mine.
What is this?
Johnny and Mr. Malone.
What's she doing here?
A girl like this is anybody's guess.
Mr. Malone, your cold seems so much better.
Well, how'd you get here?
I flew in with Senor Gomez.
Gomez? What do you mean by bringing this woman here?
She said you were expecting her.
Oh, don't blame him. He didn't have any choice. David, you can come out now.
David?
Hi.
Well, who is David?
My brother. We're both going along with you.
Your brother? I told you in London that there'd be no women on this trip, and I meant no children either.
Can't mean me, Professor. I'm past 21.
Professor, may I remind you that my father has invested $100,000 in this expedition?
Yes, indeed. It was very generous of him, but that paid for only one passenger, not three.
In that case, what would you do? Abandon us here in the jungle?
You will go back on the same plane that we came in on.
The plane has just taken off.
Sorry, Professor, but since there's only one means of transportation, I'm afraid we'll have to borrow your helicopter for a week.
For a week? It'll be quite a delay with the rains coming.
Well, we can't walk.
I'm not going to argue with you.
You heard him, Gomez. We'll leave in the morning.
It'll be a real pleasure.
We'll try to get your helicopter back to you just as quickly as possible. Coming, David? Shall we pack?
Wait a minute.
Yes, Professor?
Yes, Professor. These women. What do you say, Samuel?
Well, unfortunately, we have no choice.
Gomez?
Dangerous.
Roxton?
I'd say we'd be crazy to take any woman along.
Johnny!
But knowing this one, I'm afraid we're stuck.
Thank you, Johnny.
Malone?
I say no, it's much too risky.
Please don't be alarmed, Mr. Malone. If things get too risky for you, well, I'll just hold your hand. Come on, David.
Oh, thanks, Professor. I know it'll be fun.
Fun? At the risk of all our lives, we're on the verge of positively confirming one of the world's greatest discoveries, and you call it fun.
I'm sorry, Professor.
And dogs, too!
Night is falling as Rockstone strolls along the jetty with Jennifer. Malone, meanwhile, steps out of the trading post's main building and walks along the porch to where Gomez sits strumming his guitar and singing. He smiles at Gomez, then looks over to where Jennifer and Roxton are standing. Malone takes a seat opposite the helicopter pilot, but seems preoccupied with the couple chatting on the jetty.
Turn in too. We're making an early start in the morning.
Yeah, I will in a minute. Good night, Jenny.
Oh, thanks again for voting me in.
No, I didn't. I was neutral, remember?
Meaning you didn't want me along?
Meaning a woman's place, my love, is in the home.
Whose home?
Well, I...
You know something, Johnny? You could do worse than marry me. I think I'm one of the few girls in the world that could put up with you.
Thanks for the offer.
I take it that's a polite refusal.
Well, no, but... Jenny, I never commit myself at 22 minutes past 11.
You're ridiculous.
You're beautiful. Or maybe it's the moonlight.
One of these days.
Malone gets to his feet as Jennifer walks back along the jetty.
Good evening.
Good night.
She walks off, and Malone looks down at the smiling Gomez. Malone then joins Roxton at the end of the jetty.
Oh, Roxton.
Hello. Something wrong?
That girl shouldn't be on this trip.
I agree. Probably not for the same reason.
Then why don't you back me up? You've no right to let a girl risk her life just so she can prove she's as daring as a man.
Is that why you think she's here?
She said so herself.
Malone, you don't know very much about the female of the species.
Oh?
If you must know, Jennifer's here for two completely unrelated reasons. First, she is daring. She's as brave as a lioness. But second, and more importantly, she wants to marry a title, specifically mine.
That's very modest of you, Lord Roxton.
It's true. She tried to bring it off for the last 2 years in London. She's wonderful, but I'm not in the marrying mood at the moment.
Oh, she's not quite good enough for you, huh?
I'd say I know her well enough to realize that Jennifer doesn't love me, but she does love what I represent.
I don't believe a word of it.
That's just because you're interested in it yourself. There's no need to deny it. I knew it the first day we met. But forget it. We've got much more important things to worry about now, like getting an early start in the morning. Good night, Malone.
Roxton.
Yes?
Lipstick.
That means nothing to me.
Pausing momentarily to listen to Gomez, Roxton throws his cigarette away.
Good night.
Good night.
Malone seems downcast as he returns to his chair opposite Gomez.
Beautiful night, isn't it?
Where will we be tomorrow night?
Well, Professor Challenger gives his own counsel. I have to fly wherever he directs.
Even into Koropuri land?
Even there.
What is Koropuri, Gomez? Have you ever met an Indian who'd seen it?
No Indian who's seen it ever lived to tell.
A helicopter's flying over a branching tributary of the Amazon River. Gomez is at the controls. Professor Challenger sits next to him, lighting a cigar, while the rest of the expedition members are seated in the rear of the aircraft. Jennifer's holding her little dog up to a window and looking out at the dramatic scenery below. Costa's also at a window, staring nervously down at white clouds hanging above some jagged mountain peaks.
He's only bumping like this.
Usually.
Sit down back there. That's an order.
David sits back down.
The professor does not seem to like you, Senor David.
He doesn't make it easy for me to like him.
The bumpiness makes my stomach feel funny.
Peering down at a spectacular waterfall, Professor Summerlee writes something in a notebook, then bickers with Professor Challenger. The landscape's becoming increasingly mountainous. Roxton and Jennifer look out at another waterfall, cascading hundreds of feet down the side of a sheer cliff face. Costa still unnerved by the bumpy flight. Challenger, meanwhile, is studying a map.
No mention. Huh? Hold it right there. It isn't much further.
As you say, Professor.
The helicopter continues its flight over foreboding, rugged terrain. Scanning the area ahead through the cockpit window, Challenger spots an immense flat-topped mountain rising up above the surrounding region.
Land ho!
Land ho!
Are we there?
Are we there? This is the greatest moment of your lives. There it is! Directly ahead. You know, not too long ago, I was at the base of that plateau. High overhead, walking along the cliff edge, was a live dinosaur.
Dinosaur?
I couldn't have been mistaken. In any case, we'll soon know. Either way, there is the plateau.
Doesn't look very big to me.
A body of land uplifted by volcanic eruption 100 million years ago, cut off from the march of time by the unscalable nature of its cliffs. The land where monsters live. George Edward Challenger's lost world.
Gomez brings the helicopter down lower as they approach the top of the plateau. Trees and thick vegetation cover the monumental outcrop. Through the window, Costa gazes down at it with growing apprehension, muttering something to the person next to him. He then nods and smiles, apparently reassured by their response. Gomez flies the helicopter lower still. He slows the aircraft to a hover, then gently lowers it down towards a clearing near the very edge of the plateau. Summerlee fans himself with his hat and blows out his cheeks as the aircraft touches down.
I
The rotors spin to a halt, and Gomez takes in the dense jungle that surrounds them. The copter's main door slides open, and Challenger prepares to disembark.
I claim the honor to be the first to set foot here. Unless...
It's your plateau, Professor.
I thank you.
Wait, Professor.
Roxton and Malone both carry rifles as they follow Challenger out of the aircraft.
Oh, you don't mind, do you?
Jennifer hands Frosty to Summerlee and steps off after the others, carrying a rifle of her own.
A great moment in history. A picture of Challenger in his lost world might be in order, I think. Have you got your camera, Malone?
It's right here, Professor. You're so right about a picture.
Malone takes some snaps of Jennifer.
Reporters.
There's only about one more hour of daylight left. We'll camp over there. Let's unload what we need for tonight. You two keep your rifles handy.
Sure he knows how to use one?
Gomez is lighting a cigar.
Give me a hand, Gomez, will you?
All right.
Challenger ambles over to Summerlee.
Sure you brought us to the right plateau, Professor.
Mm-hmm.
Not a dinosaur in sight.
It's nighttime, and camp has been made not far from the helicopter. Roxton stands on his own, leaning against the tail of the aircraft, while Malone paces a short distance from the others, still holding his rifle. Near the open campfire, Gomez sits playing his guitar. Challenger's lying in a sleeping bag, while Costa and Summerlee are by a dinner table that's been set up. David sits near a tent that's illuminated from within. Everyone's alarmed by the sound. Challenger quickly gets out of his sleeping bag, while Frosty hurries to a travel basket in the tent and climbs in. Jennifer picks the basket up and emerges from the tent.
Whatever it is, it's coming this way.
Something's moving amongst the trees.
Now get back, all of you.
Come on,
back
this way.
Under the trees.
This way, Professor.
They hurry into the jungle.
Come on, Professor, hurry!
Gomez glances back. A huge, shadowy shape is lumbering through the thick vegetation behind them.
Run! I can't run faster!
As the group pick their way through thick, overhanging branches, a tendril suddenly wraps itself around Jennifer's neck. They hack their way towards Jennifer and manage to free her as the huge animal behind them moves closer.
Get her out!
Roxton helps Jennifer out of the clinging branches. The others follow on behind.
Go ahead, Professor! What a plant!
Malone holds back some tendrils, allowing Challenger and Summerlee to pass. The explorers hurry on, glancing behind them.
Careful,
the creature, a gigantic reptile, is partially obscured by the trees it's stomping through.
We rest here. Are you all right?
Yeah.
Well, you disbeliever, you. Summerlee, did you ever see such a plant?
I didn't see anything.
What?
Whatever it was, it fell over the cliff.
No. It's moving again. In another direction.
Well, we've got to find out what it is.
Not in the dark, we don't.
What could it have been? Well, hazarding a guess, I would say we've just been visited by a fully grown specimen of Jurassic dinosaur.
of the Order of Sauropoda. In other words, a brontosaurus.
You, sir, are insane.
And you, sir, are a lunatic.
Quiet! Listen!
No, please, please, I will not stay here!
You fool, come back!
Costa!
Costa!
Costa! The recipes, Costa! Have you gone crazy or something? Shut up!
He went crazy for a moment. He's all right now. But something else is not, huh?
Oh, no. The helicopter's wrecked. We've been running in circles. We're back to the camp.
My helicopter. The dinosaur, whatever it was, whatever we heard, smashed it and pushed it over the hill. Gone somewhere far below.
And our radio's gone with it. That's the last of my wire stories. The end of outside contact.
The end of us?
They look at each other fearfully. A number of waterfalls gushing over some cliffs. Then the explorers crossing a narrow river by stepping over a fallen log. Roxton and Malone are leading the way. Coming across some large red plants on the other side, Roxton holds up a hand to the others.
Now wait there. Malone, come with me.
Both men are wearing backpacks and have their rifles at the ready as they stride off into the jungle.
Prehistoric vegetables, Summerlee. At least we'll have breakfast.
I couldn't stand the thought of it.
You're very difficult to please, Summerlee.
Difficult I may be, but I cannot understand why we're going inland. Here we are on top of an unscalable plateau, our only means of flight smashed and beyond reach. Why we're not searching for another avenue of escape completely eludes me.
It eludes me too, senor.
Yes. So much eludes you, Summerlee, such as the fact that we actually heard dinosaurs pass us in the night.
But we didn't see one.
Exactly. And until we do see one with our own eyes, I'm not going to discuss any further method of escape.
Well, in that case, we could be here for the rest of our lives. Dinosaurs. Really?
The rest of our lives, senor.
Summerlee steps onto one of the circular plants, and it immediately closes up, enveloping him.
Well, Summerlee, you may not like vegetables, but they're certainly crazy about you.
Get me out of this monster!
A very affectionate plant, Summerlee.
Are you all right back there?
Yes, we're all right. Go ahead, no harm done.
What do you mean, no harm done?
Come on.
Roxton's leading Malone onwards when he suddenly stops and points at something on the ground.
Malone.
What the devil's that?
A huge three-toed footprint. Roxton finds another one further on.
Challenger! Summerlee!
What next?
Oh, dear.
Malone's photographing one of the prints as Jennifer hurries over to Roxton. Frosty jumps out of the basket she's carrying.
Johnny!
Challenger!
Yes?
Frosty!
Look at that.
Gomez and Costa crouch by a footprint.
Gomez!
Quiet.
Summerlee!
What is it?
Very likely what we came to see in the first place.
The little poodle has wandered away from the group. She comes across a gigantic horned dinosaur chewing on some foliage and barks at it. Jennifer comes looking for Frosty.
Challenger, how can I ever apologize? And what'll they say to this at home?
They'll say you're a liar and a charlatan.
In the face of Malone's photographs?
Fakes, they'll say fakes.
Specimens, then.
Specimens? But how could you get a gigantic creature like that off this plateau?
But how did we get ourselves off, senor? I first thought surely must be...
The explorers retreat. They run back the way they came. Challenger and Malone fall down an incline and come to rest by a pool of water. Challenger spots something in the jungle nearby and points his umbrella.
Look there!
A young woman running away.
After her, Malone! Catch her!
Hey!
She's invaluable!
I'll get her!
Malone chases after the pretty dark-haired girl, who's wearing a short dress made of animal skin.
Hey!
She runs into a section of jungle that's been covered in thick veils of cobwebs. Malone pauses warily before following her in. The cobwebs form a strange, silky labyrinth, and the girl tries to lose Malone inside. She stops and glances over her shoulder. She's about to run on when a monstrous green spider drops down in front of her. She manages to edge past it, hurrying out of the cobwebs and back into the jungle. Malone comes across the terrifying spider, which is dangling from above. Recoiling from the sight, he shoots it with his rifle and it falls to the ground. Cautiously, he steps towards it. Then moves past it and out into the jungle.
Challenger! Malone!
David!
We're up here! We found a good hiding place!
Oh, David!
Malone, where are you?
Challenger, what happened?
Are you all right?
Yes, I'm all right.
Well, where's Malone?
Well, he's out there somewhere.
I'll try to find him.
Here you are, David.
Where are you, Malone?
Here! Right here!
He has the native girl in tow.
Good! You caught her!
What in the world?
Quick, up here! Malone, hurry up!
That's it!
Quick! Come on, David!
They enter a large cave.
Aye, a girl. A real beauty.
We met him formerly in the jungle.
She tries to escape.
No te asustes. No te va a pasar nada.
Can't you see she doesn't understand you? Poor girl, she probably thinks we're trying to hurt her.
Samalee?
Yes?
Interesting. Native Indian. Certainly not Aboriginal.
Proving that her tribe must have found a way up here to the plateau, which also means there's a way down.
Yes, your theory makes sense. Except that why would a tribe stay here? Living with the dangers of this plateau would be like pitching a tent in a cage of lions.
That's true. Now, if the skull were cast in a more primogenial mode...
Careful, Samalee. She bites.
Oh.
Now, Samalee, you were saying that this young creature could be...
I'll tell you what she is. She's 100 pounds of walking dynamite.
Dynamite?
She's explosive, but lovely.
And you dragged her in here. Haven't you any sense at all?
I told him to catch her. The pantologic value here is incalculable. This is a scientific expedition.
All right, it's a scientific expedition. But bringing this girl here could result in all of us being killed.
I don't see how.
Can't you understand, either of you? This girl proves there's human life on this plateau. A tribe will be trying to find her. Now, unless tracking is a modern art, they'll find us too.
But she'd already seen the both of us.
And she followed you, eh? Chased after the irresistible, red-blooded American boy.
But she wasn't after my title.
What's this?
Leave Jennifer out of this.
That's what I asked you to do. Leave her out. But you hedged. You had to have her along to build up your ego.
Mr. Malone!
So you could go on boasting that she was after your title.
Roxton hits Malone, and a fight ensues. Malone decks Roxton with a solid punch to the jaw.
Come on, get up. Get up. What is it?
Roxton picks up an object he's seen.
What'd you find?
He sits up to examine it.
What is it?
Burton White's diary.
Burton White? Who is Burton White?
Or should I ask, who was Burton White?
You better read it for yourself.
3 years old. December the 10th. They're at the base of the plateau. Still no radio contact with Roxton.
No contact with you. Were you here?
Go on reading.
The rains are coming. We have to move fast. We'll ascend to the plateau tomorrow.
Ascend? How?
White had a map showing the way up.
December the 11th. Reach the top of the plateau. No time to write now of the marvels we've seen. Rain may come any day. Heading for the diamonds tomorrow.
Diamonds, he said. Diamonds, come here.
Cállate! December the 12th. Disaster has hit. They came in the night.
They?
They've taken Culver, Braddock, Santiago. Looks like they'll get me next. Still can't contact Roxton. God help us all.
Is that the last entry?
Professor, may I see it?
Me too. Is there further mention of the diamonds, Gomez?
I am not thinking of diamonds.
You've been holding out on us, Roxton. You knew about this plateau even before Challenger.
Oh, now, just a minute.
I think you'd better tell us the whole story, Johnny.
I guess you're right, Jennifer. Actually, I suppose it started centuries ago. The legend goes way back.
The legend of Kurupuri?
Kurupuri, the terror, and also of what Kurupuri seemed to guard. The 16th century Spaniards talked of it. Voltaire wrote of it in Candide, so he must have heard of it, too. El Dorado. Nobody's ever been able to pinpoint it. Always the word stood for riches beyond compare. Well, in our legend, we have them both. Kurupuri and El Dorado. A terror guarding riches.
Are you claiming that this plateau is El Dorado?
I'm not claiming anything, Professor. Except that for me, this story started 3 years ago when Burton White came to me. He was an American. He'd spent most of his life tracking down ancient civilizations and all that goes with it. He told me of how, in some Indian village out here in the jungle, he'd met a fever-stricken white man who babbled on about a plateau with monsters and diamonds. Kurupuri, El Dorado. Well, the man died. He left a map. A map showing a jungle route to the plateau and a way up to the summit.
What happened to the map?
White would never let it out of his hands. See, his interest was archaeological. Mine was purely mercenary. Diamonds were the only reason I financed the expedition. Burton White, Jim Culver, Jeff Braddock.
And Santiago.
You knew him?
Many people along the Amazon knew Santiago. A very fine man.
Well, they started without me. I'd promised to guide them, keep them out of trouble. Keep them from being killed.
But you didn't.
I never made it. The rains were coming in a month. White and his party pushed on, expecting me to follow by means of radio directions they were transmitting. I was thousands of miles away.
But why?
A girl. Oh, I told myself I could catch up. Good old Manana. I never even started.
And?
None of them ever came back.
You abandoned them.
But even without a map, you could have tried to follow.
Yeah, I suppose I could. But time passed, I ran out of funds. Simple as that.
But when your chance did come, Johnny, you did try to find them.
I'm afraid not, Jennifer. My reason was still the same, the diamonds.
Johnny.
Face the facts. 3 years in this country is a lifetime. You've heard the diary. I admit there's a chance of them being alive, but the odds are one in a million. What do you say, Gomez?
I'm afraid you're right.
Well, now you know the kind of man you've been traveling with. I guess my title doesn't mean much to you anymore, does it, Jennifer?
I wish now I'd never come.
But we must find the diamonds, senores.
More to the point, we must get off this plateau. White's map showed a way.
My helicopter is gone. And with it, all radio contact with the outside. No way of escape.
Everyone looks concerned.
Well, challenges monsters are only too real. Now this new threat of unfriendly natives.
Well, Mr. Malone, what do you suggest?
Roxton?
Roxton considers.
It's almost dark. There's very little we can do today. Tonight we all take turns standing guard. The first problem is keeping alive until the morning.
The moon appears from behind a drifting cloud, casting a gentle light on the darkened jungle below. Gomez sits at the entrance to the cave playing his guitar, while Roxton paces nearby, holding his rifle with a cigarette in his mouth. He glances at his watch before stepping closer to Gomez.
You're fond of the guitar, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Santiago was pretty good on it, too.
To me, he was the best.
You knew him well?
Yeah, very well.
Poor boy, too bad. Well, that's fate.
Maybe. But he shouldn't have died before his time.
I'd better check out back.
Roxton climbs to the cave entrance, leaving Gomez to brood on his own. The pilot's hand reaches for a locket hanging round his neck, and he holds it with a contemplative look on his face.
Everything all right?
So far.
Jennifer's resting under a blanket.
Cigarette, Jennifer?
No, thank you.
Roxton steps away, and Jennifer takes out one of her own cigarettes. Malone appears at her side and lights it for her.
Thank you, Mr. Malone.
You're welcome.
He walks off, and she rests her head back against a cushion. Costa is taking an interest in the sleeping native girl. Hiding behind a rock, he peers at her until she opens her eyes and he ducks down out of sight. The girl looks over at Jennifer, who's dozing nearby. Believing herself to be unobserved, the girl slowly sits up, then gets to her feet. Costa grabs her by an ankle and attacks her. Seeing what's going on, David rushes over and pushes Costa aside. The native girl runs out of the cave, and David follows her.
Wait a minute. Come on, calm down.
Are you all right?
I'm sorry what happened in there. We're not all like that, Costa. You know, you're kind of nice. Have a chair, huh?
He indicates a nearby rock, and the girl sits down.
See, isn't that better? Hey, look. Even though I know you don't know what I'm talking about, why don't we try some sign language, huh? You know what this is? This is a rifle. It shoots. Bang, bang. You understand? Hey, be careful. Who taught you that trick? How did you find out about a rifle?
Young idiot, you lost your wits. Who let that girl out?
She wasn't trying to escape, sir.
She told you so, I suppose. In the language of love, undoubtedly.
Never mind the language, but she did tell me something we ought to know.
Senores! Here. Come here, young creature. Somebody! Miss Holmes! Look after this young woman.
Malone! Challenger! Here! Quick! Senores!
Gomez?
What is it?
Something moved. About 50 meters away.
Seems quiet enough now.
There was something there. Under those trees. Be so kind as to keep me covered.
I'll come with you.
No, please. I go alone.
The others watch as Gomez walks over to the edge of the jungle. He disappears behind the tree line. A ricocheting shot strikes Summerlee. Jennifer crouches to help him while the native girl runs off into the jungle. Malone comes across Gomez lying against a log.
Roxton! I found Gomez! He's hurt!
Was he shot?
I don't know.
I'm all right.
Someone grabbed me. Hit me from behind. Struck my head. Say, where's my rifle?
Is he badly hurt?
No, I'm all right. Give me a hand, eh?
Let's get him back to the hideaway.
Give me a hand. That's it. I'm all right.
Okay. The girl continues her flight through the jungle. She stops and hides with her back against a tree. Jennifer's treating Summerlee.
There.
It's all right, bullet ricocheted.
It's only a graze.
Well, somebody fired that rifle.
Which means one of us must be guilty. Who else in this plateau would know how to handle a gun?
But someone else does. That's what I was trying to tell you, Professor. It might have been one of those men. Burton White or Santiago, still alive.
What makes you say that?
Because someone taught that girl how to fire a rifle. I'm sure of it.
Where is that girl? Go after her!
Roxton, Malone, and David all set off.
Scatter, that'll give us a better chance. Malone, try that way. David, up here.
A huge spider frightens the girl, and she abandons her position behind the tree.
Roxton! I found her!
Where?
Over here! I'll get her!
Malone? Where are you?
The girl's running through a thicket of bamboo shoots.
Where are you? Malone! Malone!
Malone's not far behind the girl. He hurries through thick undergrowth, and when he fails to see her, he lets out a heavy sigh. Jennifer joins him.
Her, didn't you?
I didn't have a chance. That kid can run.
A dinosaur sporting a bony fan-shaped frill at the rear of its skull stalks towards them. Malone and Jennifer flee. Moving on all fours, the creature has rows of spikes on its back and a long, snake-like tongue whips out of its mouth as it crashes through the jungle after them. Jennifer stumbles, but Malone helps her back to her feet and they continue running. Behind them, the huge bulk of a reptile knocks over a tree as it passes. Malone hurries Jennifer on. The dinosaur lumbers after them, moving slowly but steadily through the trees. It leaves the shadowy jungle and strides out onto an open plain where its long, scaly body is plainly revealed. It opens its frightening jaws. Jennifer looks exhausted, but Malone sees that the dinosaur is catching up and he grabs her by the arm and forces her to keep going. They run on, desperately trying to escape the creature's relentless advance. The dinosaur climbs up onto a rocky ridge, where it can look down upon the fleeing couple. Jennifer trips and falls again, and seeing the monstrous lizard towering over her, she screams. Malone fires his rifle at it, then helps Jennifer behind a rocky outcrop, out of sight of the dinosaur. It creeps closer, rearing its head and opening its enormous jaws. Seeing the arrival of a second dinosaur, Jennifer begins to weep. Malone shakes her by the shoulders, while the two behemoths roar at each other. The second reptile is an enormous crocodile-like creature with horns and a spiny fin along its back.
Come on!
Malone takes a shot at it as it approaches.
It's like a toy against them. Come on.
As Malone and Jennifer cower behind the rock, which is close to a cliff edge, the two dinosaurs charge at each other across the open plain. A vicious fight ensues. The first lizard grabs the other by the neck and shakes it, but the crocodile-like dinosaur gives as good as it gets. It clamps its jaws on one of the opponent's legs and tears at it. They bite and claw at one another, each trying to gain the advantage. The first dinosaur swings its long tail out and it knocks Jennifer and Malone off the edge of the cliff and onto a rocky ledge just below it. Protectively, Malone puts his arms around Jennifer as they wait for the titanic struggle to come to an end. The dinosaurs roll across the ground as they snap at each other, their bodies intertwined, the battle taking them ever closer to the edge of the cliff. The first creature grabs the other's head in its jaws. For a moment, the crocodile-like dinosaur seems subdued, but then it fights back, biting into its opponent's leg again and savaging it with rapid shakes of its head. Gripped in the death struggle, the enormous lizards roll towards the edge of the cliff. An avalanche of dirt is dislodged as the creatures both roll off the cliff and plunge into the black abyss below.
Come on, Jenny.
Roxton!
There's no one on guard.
David?
Gomez!
They find the cave is empty.
A cyclone hit the place.
My brother. Johnny.
That was a shooting we heard. That girl's tribe must have been waiting for the chance.
David. They're all gone.
Roxton! Challenger!
They're all probably dead. Oh, Rusty! Oh, it's all my fault. David, I persuaded him to come. He thought it was going to be
come
fun. On.
No, it's not your fault, Jenny. Come on.
All I wanted was Johnny. Frosty! Frosty, come home. Oh, Frosty.
An exhausted-looking David appears.
David.
Oh,
got them. Who's they?
More clever than natives, they dragged us off. I only escaped by the skin of my teeth.
Well, how'd they get here?
They dropped on us from the rocks up.
Ed!
Native tribesmen have spears aimed at them. Captives of the long-haired natives, who are dressed in little more than loincloths and carrying flaming torches, Malone, Jennifer, and David are being led through the jungle. They're taken to a clearing where more tribespeople holding torches are moving rhythmically to the beat of distant drums. Malone spots the native girl he captured earlier and stops to stare at her before he's moved on by one of the many spear-wielding men around him. In a subterranean cavern, a ritual is taking place. The tribal chief, a man with a white painted face and wearing an elaborate headdress, is beating on a drum in front of a large fire. He holds up his hands, silencing the numerous men and women who sit playing on primitive instruments nearby. Malone, Jennifer, and David have been presented to the man, and he signals for them to be taken away before striking up the beat once more. As the brightly painted natives continue with their ritual, the three prisoners are led up a stone staircase and into a cave-like chamber, where Challenger and the rest of the explorers are being held.
Jennifer.
Johnny.
You all right, David?
So they got you too, eh?
Well, that's that. What do we do now, Professor?
Well, what do we do now, Professor?
Perhaps the only thing to do is to pray.
In the main cavern, the chief continues to hammer on his drum, and two elder members of the tribe nod their heads to the beat. The sound seems to be taking its toll on Costa, who gets to his feet with a worried look on his face.
The drums are beating faster. He's getting on my nerves.
They would, no doubt.
Those guards still outside, Malone.
Malone goes to the entrance of the chamber, only to be forced back in at spear point by a guard.
They're still there, just a little touchy. But the ones below are really getting nervous.
They must be planning something terrible. But what can it mean?
It means that the news of my great discovery will never be known to the outside world. They undoubtedly intend to kill us.
Kill us?
But why not? An invasion of privacy gives a man the right to kill. We are the invaders. Besides, they're obviously cannibals.
Cannibals?
Costa,
no!
Costa, cállate!
No!
The last tenant, no doubt.
I don't want to die. Not me.
Shut up.
But why should I die? What have I done? Why should I?
Shut up.
David, look!
Huh? Look who's here. A friendly enemy, perhaps. A passage up there in the roof. She's asking David to go with her. But I can't come without the others. You must take all of us. All of us. No, he must come too.
All right, then. Let's all go up. Somebody help somebody.
I'm perfectly capable of helping myself. Ah!
As the ritual proceeds, the native girl leads Challenger and the others up a steep incline that takes them out of the chamber. The flaming torch she's holding illuminates the dank and dripping grotto they're passing through. Challenger holds his umbrella above his head as he climbs upwards. The tribal chief holds his hands up once more. The two elders nod at him. The chief turns and a number of younger men carrying torches and spears gather at his side before following him up the stairs. The native girl is leading Challenger and the others through another underground cavern. She leads them up an incline at the far side. Followed by his men, the chief enters the chamber to discover the prisoner's gone. They set off in pursuit. The torch the native girl is carrying appears in the darkness of a narrow tunnel. She emerges from the tunnel, followed by Roxton, Jennifer, and the others. Then she picks her way down a steep rock face. There, an old man with long white hair and beard occupies a makeshift living area in a cave.
Here, ho!
Who is it?
Bia. Merci.
Oh, Manahia.
Kiwa
Bohia. Oh,
Manahia. White. Burton White.
Who is it?
Johnny.
Johnny?
He must be the one who shot you, Professor Samuel.
He couldn't have.
He passes a hand in front of the man's face.
This man is blind.
Oh. There it goes again. Third time tonight. One day it'll blow its head off.
Burton, listen to me. Don't you recognize my voice? Johnny Roxton.
Roxton? Johnny Roxton?
I made it 3 years too late.
Senor White.
Yes?
You do not know me. My name is Gomez. There were others with you. Among them, Santiago. Is he alive?
No, I'm sorry. I'm the only one left.
Dead. Santiago dead.
Ahula mana.
Biao.
Una mana.
Con Dio.
Oh, so that's it. If what she says is true, you're really in trouble.
How bad?
Will they kill us, senor?
Of course, if they can. Except she doesn't want you to die. That rumble was stronger.
Burton, you had a map showing the way on and off this plateau. Can you help us?
Maybe.
Well, can you?
The answer is still maybe. And you'd have to risk the cave of fire.
The cave of fire?
This whole mountain is honeycombed with volcanic passageways, most of them leading to dead ends. But one of them, just one, goes from the top of the plateau down through the heart of the mountain and out through a cave exit more than a mile from its base. Oh, but that one passageway leads you right through the cave of fire.
Just what is this cave of fire?
The reason the natives came to the plateau many years ago, and it's why they stay, even though death and terror constantly threaten them. It's the altar of sacrifice to their fire god.
Sacrifice?
The place they undoubtedly plan to kill you.
No, not me, please, go!
All of you, as soon as they catch up.
They all listen to the sound of the approaching natives.
Burton, listen, it's Johnny again. Is there a chance through this cave of fire?
If you can beat them to it and close a great swinging rock behind you, a boulder might hold it shut. Then, if you're real lucky, the fire god will be sleeping.
Yes, yes, senor.
How do we find the cave?
That way, there. Follow the passage down through a place the natives call the Graveyard of the Damned. You find a ledge across a cliff face. Follow it if you can. The entrance to the fire cave is beyond.
You're coming with us.
No, no. Too old, too tired.
The natives think he helped us. I'll kill him.
They won't hurt me. Killing a blind man is one of their taboos.
What about the girl, Mr. White?
Yes, yes, you must take her with you. They'll kill her if they find out she helped you escape. Mananu Haka.
Siaho?
Yes. Johnny, now!
As the native girl starts leading David, Jennifer, and Malone through another tunnel, Challenger steps closer to Burton.
Mr. White, my name is Challenger. I'd like to help you. Is there anything...
Forget it, quick! On your way!
Senor, one little matter. Diamonds. There was talk of diamonds.
We'll see them on the way.
See them?
If you make it that far. Go on!
Diamonds.
Apurate.
Johnny! Guns! Wait. Here. Here. Maybe these will help you.
Burton hands Roxton a rifle and a revolver. Roxton passes the revolver to Gomez.
Burton,
go.
As Roxton heads off into a tunnel, Costa lingers and prevents Gomez from shooting Roxton in the back.
No, Gomez, not now. I saw the picture, I understand, but don't kill him now.
He's responsible for Santiago's death.
You see, I know, but there will be a better time.
What better time than now?
Do they help us find the diamonds?
I don't care about the diamonds. But there might be a better time. Vamos.
Gomez grabs a torch from the wall. With the native girl's torch lighting the way, the others follow her down a treacherously steep rock face. The chief's leading his men up through the dank and dripping grotto. Challenger's party experience a sudden tremor.
White was correct. This plateau is in danger of blowing up.
Rocks start falling from above.
Cookie was equally correct about a way of escape.
The native tribesmen are now running through one of the chambers the explorers passed through earlier. Meanwhile, the native girl continues to lead the way as the subterranean passage takes them ever deeper. The tribesmen are closing in when suddenly the explorers are brought to a halt by the sight of a frightening obstacle ahead of them. A gap in the rock wall they must pass through is alive with grasping tendril. David, Jennifer, Malone and Challenger all make it past the tendrils. Summerlee has to fight his way through.
Excuse me.
The native girl and Costa are next to rush through the gap. Finally, Roxton and Gomez hurry past the greedy, curling tendrils. Explorers enter a vast chamber, dominated by the gigantic rib bones of some long-dead animal. There are fires burning amongst the rocks, and a thick carpet of mist rolls across the floor.
Look at the size of that skeleton.
Must be the oldest cemetery in the world.
They stop to take in their surroundings.
The old man was right. It is the graveyard of the damned.
Pray heaven it won't be ours.
White's had to keep left. That's that skeleton down there.
Let's keep moving then.
They make their way down some steps in the rock, following the native girl who leads them through the center of the enormous rib bones. Bringing up the rear with the rifle, Roxton warily glances over his shoulder more than once.
These fumes are deadly.
They're jumping across the spinal bones, using them as stepping stones across a small lake. Clouds of steaming gas are floating just above the surface. On the other side, they climb onto a very narrow ledge above a pit of molten lava.
Careful now, watch your step.
Go ahead.
The native girl suddenly looks reluctant to continue.
What's the matter up there?
I don't know.
What's the matter with that girl?
Mia! Mia!
She's afraid. It must be the native taboo.
One of us had better take the lead.
You go ahead. I'll keep an eye on the others.
All right.
Professor?
Roxton takes the lead.
Don't give her a minute.
Jennifer.
Roxton takes Jennifer's hand, and together they slowly proceed along the upward slanted ledge, their backs to the rock face.
Come on, Professor.
I'll take that.
Summerlee takes the torch from the native girl, and everyone moves cautiously along the ledge. Then Summerlee slips. But manages to recover. The rock wall is tinged bright red from the glow of the boiling lava below. The explorers move with painstaking care. The perilous ledge is only a foot or so wide. Professor Challenger is still holding his umbrella as he follows on behind Malone, Roxton, and Jennifer. Stepping onto a boulder, it gives way. Dropping his umbrella, he falls and is left clinging to the edge of the ledge.
I think I can reach you.
Hold this.
Hang on.
No!
Get back up.
That's the order. Hang on, Professor. They'll get you. Give me your hand.
You young lunatics, have you seen what's below? Come on, that's it.
All right. Hold on, boy.
Oh, David.
Hang on.
Give me a hand, boy.
I can make it.
Challenger and his helpers make it back onto the ledge.
Professor?
Yeah.
Give me that.
All right, let's keep moving.
They continue their slow progress along the ledge. They reach a tunnel in the rock face, and one by one, they disappear into it. Gomez is the last to go. He looks back across the steam-filled cavern and sees the chief and his party of spear-wielding tribesmen enter the graveyard. Gomez retraces his steps, picking his way back along the ledge. He reaches an outgrowth of tangled branches halfway along the ledge and sets fire to them with his torch. Gomez then heads for the tunnel just as the tribesmen reach the ledge. The branches combust in a blazing fireball, sending the chief and two of his followers plunging into the pit.
Hurry! Gomez!
Coming! My fire won't hold him by long.
Help me! Push! Push!
They swing a heavy boulder over the tunnel behind them.
Oh, I'm all right, Samuel. I have to thank you all for saving my life. Malone, I never did apologize for hitting you on the head with my umbrella.
That's okay, Professor. What now?
Look. A lake of boiling lava.
Damned in by the natives.
Fixed so it can be broken. See the plug?
It breaks and we're covered in hot lava.
Why should the natives wish to break the dam?
One more quake, it'll come down anyway. Try and find the way out of here.
If the escape passage still exists.
It does, right there.
Let's go.
They're making their way to the entrance of the passageway when Costa spots a collection of huge diamonds nestled in a natural basin protruding from the rock wall.
The diamonds! We are rich forever!
Diamonds!
Challenger, look!
Dinosaur eggs. Summerlee, what unbelievable luck.
Not so lucky. This is the end of the journey. Roxton, drop your rifle.
As Costa fills his hat with diamonds, the others step over to where Gomez is pointing his gun at Roxton.
Gomez, you
taken leave of your senses?
No, Professor, no. I almost wish I had. But this is something I have to do. Don't move, Costa.
Gomez, am I not your partner?
You never were.
You wanted the diamonds for yourself.
I want your life, Roxton. In exchange for that of a man you sent to his death, but you deserted Burton White.
White's alive.
I don't mean White. I mean Santiago. My brother.
Your brother?
Put that gun down, Gomez. There'll be no killings here. It is my vow, Professor. I tried it before. My bullet struck the wrong man.
Then it was you who shot at me.
That's right.
Now, Gomez, be reasonable. What have these people done to hurt you?
Nothing. Unfortunately, I...
Gomez, don't kill me, I beg you.
Malone hurls the hat full of diamonds at Gomez. Just then, a huge dinosaur rears its head out of a deep pool of water behind him. Roxton shoots at it, but the lizard grabs Costa in its jaws. Roxton and Malone help Gomez to his feet.
We've got to find another way out. There's one chance. Be ready to run for it. I'll break the dam.
Eaten alive. Horrible. Horrible.
The others look up at Malone, who's climbing towards the dam. He halts and glues himself to the cliff face as the dinosaur turns its attention to him. It backs off and he climbs upwards.
Gomez. Rux and I. We are even now. Alive for alive.
The young fool, what's he doing now?
Malone has grabbed hold of a tree trunk embedded in the stonewall dam. He swings his full weight on it, trying to break the dam.
I'm in your debt now. It was my shot that awakened the monster. Gomez!
Gomez risks the climb to the dam. Like Malone, he's forced to stop on the way up as the dinosaur comes close, its fearsome jaws wide open. He pushes on and manages to make it to the top. He runs over to help Malone, adding his weight to the tree trunk and dislodging rocks from the wall of the dam. The dam begins to crumble.
Come on, Gomez, that's enough!
It's not enough!
Gomez, come on, it's breaking!
You go again!
Gomez! Let go!
Gomez!
As Malone clings to the rock face, trying to avoid the looming dinosaur, Gomez continues to rock the tree trunk, finally breaking the dam. An avalanche of smoking lava and rocks falls onto the dinosaur. The huge creature disappears beneath the surface of the raging pool. A sudden tremor shakes the cavern. Malone and Roxton see Gomez, still clinging to the tree trunk, fall into the lava-filled water below. Another tremor knocks them off their feet as rocks rain down on them. Challenger, Jennifer, David, and the native girl are fleeing towards the passageway. They head inside as more lava and debris from the broken dam crashes into the pool of water. Huge boulders are falling from above now as Malone and Roxton run to the passageway. Just as they make it inside, the cavern behind them is destroyed in a cataclysm of fire and smoke. The survivors of the expedition, along with the native girl, emerge coughing from the passageway. They find themselves near the base of the flat-top mountain and look up to see the top of the plateau erupt in an immense fireball. The explosions illuminate the explorers and the jungle behind them. Somber-faced, Professor Challenger gazes at the fires burning high above.
My lost world. Lost forever.
Now we'll never prove anything in London.
Oh, yes, we will. I thought this might help.
One of the dinosaur eggs.
Hardly worth the lives of all those men. But then nor were these.
Diamonds.
Johnny.
How'd you manage those?
No fire monster's big enough to deprive you of a wedding gift. Well, Mrs. is still the best title for a girl.
Jennifer kisses both Malone and Roxton on the cheek.
But, don't you want any of them?
Well, I kept a few for the rest of us.
The explosion makes Challenger drop the egg. It breaks, revealing...
a baby dinosaur! Ha! Tyrannosaurus Rex! Ha!
But will it live, Professor? Will it be all right?
It'll live long enough to grow as big as a house and terrify all London.
Then what'll we do?
Well, we'll move out of London as fast as possible.
The end.